Hello, welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 90.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and our nerves are still in tatters in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, this week, finally, we have something positive to talk about following our 2-1 win at Southampton last Sunday, which leaves us 3 points above the drop zone with a game in hand. So that means we go into today's game with Newcastle full of confidence. With our home form being what it is, though, our nerves are ready to be shredded again. Other good news this week is that big Bob Sanchez received a deserved call-up to the Spain squad for the forthcoming World Cup qualifiers, and former Albion striker Maheta Malango is the surprise new PFE chief executive starting from the end of the season. Joining me to discuss all of this and more is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back the Argus's top scribe, Brian Owen, and we also welcome back Vicky Rees. Hello, everyone. How are we all?
Good evening. Hi. Hello, morning, afternoon.
Yeah. Brian, I've got to say, I called you the Argus's top scribe there, but then you weren't featured in the new ITV series Grace at the weekend.
No, I wasn't. I haven't even seen it myself, but I went to one of the staff online teams meeting and they all seemed very pleased with themselves. And there was I think there was a reporter on there, wasn't there? And an Argus billboard. So
several.
But apart from what's on Sky Sports and Sky Sports News, I'm not a big expert on what's going on TV, but it has caused some excitement in our office, that's for sure. Not office, virtual office.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing for the paper, though.
This is in the days when the Argus was based up in Hollingbury.
Okay.
Because once upon a time, you know, I used to work at the Argus from 97 to 99 on the night shift, on the I can't remember my pre-press. That's the...
Yeah, pre-press.
I was pre-press and worked till 2:30 in the morning. And it's a good job I had a car in those days. But I've always found it a bit odd that the Argus would move, you know, bearing in mind it's the news centre of Brighton. It would move from the centre where Wagamama's is now. Right onto the edge of the city. It always baffled me that. Were you there when they moved?
No, it's before my time. But I know there was a massive press, actually print press there, which obviously they couldn't have fitted into the old building, as you say, in North Road. And I mean, I sort of heard people talking about why they moved, and it was at a stage where people who'd planned it were quite pleased with themselves, and it was more because we were sort of a countywide publication. There was editions going out. There was the Brighton edition, obviously, but there was also a West Sussex edition, which we always had to get ready for 11:30, and East Sussex, Mid Sussex. So I think they thought they've got room for the press. They're still in Brighton and they're on the A27 and pretty near the A23. So I think that was all that. And it was a massive building as well, wasn't it?
Huge,
a grim building, but quite a huge working floor. So that's what it was, I think. Well, but no, I'm pretty sure that's what it was anyway. But it's good. It was good to be back.
It sounds about right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It all makes sense when you look at it.
But your lunch when you did the evening shift, it was 5:30 till 2:30. Lunch was about 9 o'clock in the evening. And your only option, you have one of two options. You could go over the road to Asda.
Asda. Yeah.
Thankfully, had just started 24-hour opening, or you could go down to the kitchen or to the canteen.
The canteen, yeah.
And have the leftovers from the lunch that was probably about 8 hours old.
Well, for us, because it was an evening paper when I started, you'd get in at 7 a.m. and start doing the first edition that came out and go down maybe about 9:30 for some breakfast. And all the printers were there and it was an absolutely hive activity. And then when the press went, then the canteen went, and then but anyway, now the building's gone, so it's all gone.
Oh yeah.
Now, Brian, you didn't go to the canteen on Sunday, but you did go to St Mary's. So let's start there. How was it?
My first away game actually for a little while for various reasons. It was it was good. You obviously saw the only thing is, I mean, I saw probably what you saw to a large extent. I heard more of Adam Lallana and his voice echoing around the stands, but the game obviously sort of almost to quote Alf Ramsey went out and won it twice in a way, didn't they? But the second half, I think everybody was but quite encouraged and you say nerves, nerve shredded. Only for about 30 seconds, I would have said, when Lallana did a la Bruno at Huddersfield a couple of years ago and the up and under. But I thought I thought they were fairly comfortable.
It came across that way. Vicky, I mean, as well, one welcome back to the Raw, but you know, like the rest of us, had to watch the game from the armchair, and you're kind of missing out on bellowing at the players or hearing the players bellowing and what have you. I mean, for the last few games, certainly where it's been, each game has been a squeaky bum game. You know, what did you make of that sort of general performance down at Southampton?
I think the first half probably had us a little bit more nervous. I know we went ahead, but obviously then managed to concede again. But I thought the second half performance was better. I think we were a lot more balanced. I think Potter changed the formation at half time, and that made a difference. I think from memory that we started out with the four at the back, didn't we? And then he just switched it around. And I'm sure everyone, let's make no bones about it, everyone's sitting there thinking, Zakiri coming on what's effectively a sort of left wing back. But actually, in the same way as some of the team selections this season, some of the more off the wall team selections have probably resulted in some of the stronger performances or the better results. And in the games where we've all gone, what on earth? And it was probably the same with that change at halftime. Good Lord, what you're doing. It may well have been forced to some extent because of Burn's injury, but actually it worked really well. And I think I agree with Brian. I don't think it didn't really, yes, of course we were nervous, but I didn't really feel like we were under a huge amount of pressure. Sanchez, luckily for him, has not had an awful lot to do.
I think the nerves to a certain extent were because of the fact that when we've been trying to close out a game, when we've been in the position with defending a lead going into the last few minutes or defending a point going into the last few minutes. So the last few games, you know, like the Palace game, the Leicester game, we succumbed to a late sucker punch. And, you know, and when they were attacking, and I mean, we talk about the rules of the game shortly, but you know, when they could have got a penalty towards the end, and as Brian said, when Lallana skied the clearance and stuff, you know, it's you know, you just feel that this
it's always easy to, it's always easy to be wise after the event, isn't it? Because you relax on it, you think, actually, yeah, not a bad performance. But we, as a Brighton fan, I mean, you know, collectively, there's probably, you know, over 130 years of Albion sort of following amongst us four. You know full well there's a dropsy coming, there's a slip up, there's a, you know, your textbook, there's an Adam Alabd on the way, there's a, you know, and Ben White hasn't got that out of his system yet. You know, Adam Webster had that in his system last year. There's always a dropsy, there's a sliced clearance, there's a misplaced punch, there's something going to happen because we're Brighton fans, and that's what happens when you play, and then the final whistle goes, you think, well, that was pretty cool, actually. It's easy to be wise after the event, but at the time, yeah, your adrenaline certainly turns brown for a lot of the time that Southampton got near to the penalty area. I'm saying is I'm really grateful Danny Ings wasn't playing.
I think I've looked at these games and I think, you know, sometimes when you think, in the same way that when we think we're playing really well, and I try and ask myself at the end, well, how many saves has their keeper had to make? And the same with the opposition as well. And that was the thing. Yes, of course, there was the nerves. That's not going to go away because of our habit of conceding leads. said Southampton also, I think, had a... I think they were either the only team with a worse record of conceding leads than us, or they were certainly up around there. And so it felt like there was a point when I was thinking in that game, something's got to give from that, because I think someone else said it was a case that with the respective records, it was a case of the resistible force meets the resistible force meets the movable object, wasn't it? Something had to give.
Yeah. But it was fun nonetheless. I mean, you know, for all the fact that we've, in you know, the Palace game and the other teams that we've had playing around us, we've absolutely battered those teams, either 0-0 or we've not got the result, what have you. We seem to get the results when both teams are when we're not the team in the ascendancy. It's almost a case of, look, are you guys going to come and give us a game? Because we don't know how to win this. They only seem to know how to win it when their backs are against the wall, it seems. I mean, I know it's a ludicrous concept to come up with as to how you should approach your football.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, the possession stats, yeah, the most of our wins, particularly away from home, have come where we've had less possession than the opposition.
Yeah, funny you should mention that, because I've seen people quoting that stat. So I asked Graham Potter about it at his press conference, because it seemed to be the theory that Brighton are better without the ball, but I just didn't know whether it's more the team that's chasing the game are going to have more of the ball. I mean, how much time have we spent sitting in the Amex watching Brighton pile up possession and passes around the edge of the opposition penalty area without looking to score. So I don't know if it's just, I mean, he gave me quite a wide ranging non-committal answer, but the only game where they've won with more than 50% of possession was actually the Newcastle, the corresponding fixtures to this time. Yeah. But I mean, with the what I didn't see was what the possession was, you know, at different parts of the game. But I just thought it was quite an interesting one because that is in the second half at Southampton, that is the shape they like. It's what they look best in, but it's finding the pieces to put into that shape when you haven't got March.
Are you saying the five at the back is the Albion's preferred?
The sort of the three, yeah. I mean, it's sort of a 3-4-3. I think they look more comfortable in that. Sure. I mean, funny enough, Pascal Groves almost played as a right back, and he was almost more surprising than Zakiri when you saw them come out and you thought, what's he doing over there? Whereas Zakiri, wing back, I suppose, but he was more sort of wing than back. But I just think that shape looks, they just look, that looks like their best shape. But it's that, do you play all the players in their best position, which means not playing that shape, or do you play your favourite shape but try and be a bit flexible with the players? But apparently Pascal Groves had done a bit over there during the week, and so had Zakiri wide left, which he's gravitated to anyway when he's come on a sub. So and they got Trossard into that more dangerous area, didn't they, on a consistent basis?
Yeah. We're going to talk about that goal in a minute because I've got a theory on that as well. But I mean,
he closed his eyes and hoped for the best.
Yeah, basically, that's what it was. Yeah. I mean, in regards to the team news, basically, there's only one change. Danny Welbeck came in for Alexis McAllister, and I thought Danny Welbeck was instrumental in all the good stuff we were doing. I think Lallana was probably the man of the match and deservedly so, but Welbeck wasn't far behind him.
In as much as Lallana is a player who, he worries me in as much as, are we going to get 25 minutes out? We've got 90 minutes out when we go to Southampton. That was brilliant. But there is an element of, you know, sort of a kind of a car waiting to break down with him. So he makes me nervous. But when he is playing brilliantly, and as Brian said, and Adi, you've heard this, I've heard this, dear God, Lallana has a foghorn of a voice. Him and Adam Webster, you know, I'm sure they'd have a lovely shouting match one day, and they'd probably do it from neighbouring postcodes. They are so noisy. But Lallana has actually picked up the pieces where I can't help feeling, and I maybe I'm being harsh, but I kind of feeling that Yves Bissouma has actually just retreated back into his shell a little bit, or maybe he's been asked to do so, because Bissouma for me, and you know, until probably about 6 weeks ago, had been our player of the season by quite a country mile. Mm-hmm. And he seems to have sort of regressed a little bit. I don't know if it's a form thing or a formation thing, or I don't know what it is, but that's where the likes of Lallana comes in, because for me, he is really showing his Premier League and England credentials, and is, you know, we're not going to have him for a long time as a player in our team. Hopefully we'll get the 3 years out of him. But if we do get the 3 years out of him that we've had so far in the two-thirds of a season, they are going to be three very good years.
Yeah. Vicky?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Lallana, you know, he's obviously been in and out of the team, but I think the last probably two of, it's certainly the last two games, isn't it, have been his best. You know, I think we've seen him very much in fits and starts. And I don't think I'd be unfair on saying that he would probably have been disappointed with his performances until quite recently. Not saying he's been terribly bad, but I just don't think he's particularly, you know, he's not been influential in games up until quite recently. I appreciate that's going to be down to you know, fitness and match fitness as well. And I think, you know, the same, you know, with Welbeck. I mean, it's been quite documented, isn't it? The Albion are, relatively speaking, a young side when they complete the list of the squads in the Premier League, and the Albion are one of the younger ones in there. And you know, that's probably partly, that probably has some impact on the so-called game management, doesn't it? Whether the players have got that, you know, enough in their heads to close games out when we have got that lead. Probably explains why Crystal Palace are quite good at clinging on to their leads, because they've got the oldest squad in the league, and you know, they've all been there and done it. So, but yeah, I think, yeah, if, you know, let's hope Lallana can keep himself fit, because I think, you know, much as it's been brilliant having these younger players coming in, it's been fantastic, hasn't it? You know, these younger guys coming in and having their say and dictating games, I should say. I guess there's always a time, and it's perhaps when the pressure's on, it's good to have that little bit of experience in there.
Well, sorry, Adrian. It's your classic example of needing. I know it's an old football cliche, but the blend of youth and experience. I mean, Brian, I mean, it's you can't help feeling that without, and there's only two, Lallana's the only one over 30 who's playing at the moment. I mean, you can clearly call Lewis Dunk a senior player, but if either of those two weren't playing, I'd fear a seriously rudderless team.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the one who doesn't get mentioned as well, not at the moment, is Veltman, who is, look at the part he played, and he's played positions now that he wasn't really playing at Ajax. And that pass, we're going to talk about the goal later, because the first
about it now, because I mean, I've got exactly the same thing that I know what you're going to say, Brian. It's funny enough. but I mean, yeah, I mean, the goal that won the game, which was a wonderful, wonderful team move. I mean, you look at the movement of it's all one touch football, but it was all started by that ball from Joel Beltman, which went forwards rather than sideways.
Mm. And he looked like he was going to play back, didn't he? And I think it's one of those where they've had a little attack and you almost mentally relax a little bit. You think, obviously, going back to Dunk or back to the keeper. And he played that reverse pass. And I think it took three players out. And then Morten Lallana and his pass and the Welbeck little layoff were sort of more talked about. But he set that in motion. Just a couple of things on what we were saying before about the game management, by the way. I think the ones where they've struggled is when they've been between two stools, is when they've been level in games, and it's do we attack or do we hold what we've had? Touch wood, when they've been one up late on, Leeds, Tottenham, Liverpool, Southampton, they've been pretty good. So that's sort of really addressing that, if you like. And with Lallana as well, the fitness, it's obviously come out this week and he's been talking about his COVID. And he was, you know, he said sort of hit for six for a week or so. And then he felt better and better and better. In a way, that's almost good to know that it's not just ongoing. You know, he's got over it, which is good. But it's not like he's got some sort of physical niggle or something in his leg that's gonna trouble him. So, and then he's been, so strong last two games and in two different positions as well.
With Lallana's continued appearances in the team, I mean, it's come pretty much at the expense of Alexis McAllister, who again has been absolutely wonderful in those games that he has, and he's a very, very intelligent player that can find that pass. So,
I think you've got to go with a senior player. Don't get me wrong, McAllister is a fine, and he's improved dramatically since the end of last season, the beginning of this season. But I think in that sense, if you've got a fit Adam Lallana and a fit Alexis McAllister, I think you have to go with the senior player, if nothing else for the experience. Can you play the two together? I'm not sure it's happened too many times, but McAllister can also be a foil, a substitute for Pascal Gross as well. So, you know, there's always room for someone like Alexis McAllister on account of the fact that it's very rare that either Lallana and or Gross will last the 90 minutes anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of the changes that Graham Potter made was, as we mentioned, there was to get Trossard further inside the pitch, more in a number 10 role, pretty much, really. Is that a role we can see him fulfilling for the rest of the season, do you think?
Vicky?
He's had the same... To be totally honest, I thought Trossard had a very flat first half in that game, and you could probably say that for a number of the players, but in the second half, the thing for me was once he'd scored that goal, it was like someone had pressed the confidence button with him, because it was near the end. It was, you know, somewhere towards injury time in the second half, and we had the ball on the far side, I'll call it, from where the cameras were, and there was little flicks going on, and they were trying to get the ball down to the corner, of course they were, but the little flicks and tricks that were coming out of Trossard then, it was like he was a different player. As I said, I thought the first half was a little bit, you know, the Trossard we have seen at times this season where he's lacked confidence and who can blame him when he keeps smacking against the woodwork. But as I said, he was a different player once that goal had gone in, and suddenly he was like he was a little sprite. He was everywhere, all over the pitch.
Do you reckon that you could actually highlight or zero in on where you feel Trossard's best position is?
No, I mean, Well, I'd like to think we've got the goalkeeping nailed now, but we'll get to that later, I'm sure. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, he has a role to play out wide, but then you know, he can have a game where he's brilliant and then he can have a game where you don't see him at all. Now, whether that's down to him or down to the rest of the team, I don't know. Consistency is his thing, isn't it? He's clearly got a lot to offer. It's just trying to, I don't envy Potter in having to work out where is it best placed. I mean, he obviously can play down the middle as well, but I mean, let's be honest, the biggest shock for all of us was the way he finished that move. Lovely. We've done lots of lovely moves. It's just we normally miss at the end of them.
Yeah, I mean, his best performances for us have been when he's been more central. I mean, think Liverpool at home last season, Man United at home this season. I mean, he dictated the play and actually drove the team forward. So, I mean, I think that, I mean, there is a place for him there. I mean, we've got an abundance of riches in that position, but
I've got to be honest with you, Adrian. The number of times I've been onto the Anfield Wrap, which is the Liverpool version of this show, except probably about 50 times bigger, just because there are a number of fans across the world. But they, when their guys are watching our games as neutrals, because they encompass, the Anfield Wrap encompasses other games a lot more, they really rate Trossard. They see him play. They're really in love with what he's doing. They love Bissouma more, don't get me wrong. They really want Bissouma in their team. But they absolutely adore what Trossard's trying to do. And I'm thinking, great, could you tell us what it is you see? Because there's times where I really can't see it.
I can see him being a player who would really catch the eye if you're watching Brighton and you don't watch them that often. But was it three goals now, is it this season?
Yeah.
I mean, he should be doing more than that. And if you look at Potter, he obviously keeps playing him, shows a lot of faith in him. But at the same time, he did say after the game on his Zoom session that he's told him he's got to score more goals and he's got to create more assists. So it's a sort of mixed message in a way. But the main thing is he keeps picking him.
Mm. I mean, it's that perfect hat trick he got against Man United of left post, right post, and crossbar, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah,
but... we didn't talk about the other goal, which was Lewis Dunk's fourth of the season, resulted from a corner where Neil Maupay linked up really well with Dele Welbeck and brought a great save out of Forster there. But it was a clever corner. No, but I don't know where the Southampton marking was for Lewis Dunk, but it was
I'll tell you what Lewis Dunk did. He did to Southampton exactly what Vestergaard did to us in the return fixture, was poor marking, header from the penalty spot between the penalty spot and the edge of the penalty area. If you can get your sort of like, you know, really zoom in there, head muscles. I always think of, it's actually of all people, it's actually Ulloa is the one who I think of the player in recent years who can get a good headed power from an awkward position, you know, their neck muscles as if he's got the neck of a giraffe, which he clearly hasn't. Lewis Dunk does have that. And, you know, you could criticise Forster maybe. I just think he saw it late, but he just did to Southampton what Vestergaard did to us. So Yabu sucks to them.
Yep, absolutely. And it was his fourth of the season as well. So he's just three behind Neil Maupay now. Who's to say he's not going to finish up? He could end up on penalties now as well.
But I mean, and it wouldn't be the first time that he's actually then finished top scorer, isn't it?
Well, he got six that season. That tells you all you need to know. But okay, well, we've got to talk about the Southampton double jeopardy and when is advantage not advantage, Brian?
Yeah, it's one of those where you're writing, you're sitting there sort of tweeting and writing stuff and you're getting people coming back to you and you're thinking, I should know this, but I'm sure that's not right. You know, it's all right in the, you watch the Six Nations and they let them play on for a little while and try the kick to the corner. If it doesn't, you get your penalty. But that just didn't seem right to me. And I think I'm right in saying it wasn't right.
No, it wasn't. And
have you actually read up on the law of what it is? Because it seems to be certain nuances in the law that aren't actually written. It's almost as if there's a kind of a reference code rather than the actual law that a given nation or a given football association will adhere to.
Well, I think if you play advantage and it results in it basically, is he going to pull the ball back? Is he going to pull it back if he scores? He's not going to pull it back, is he? But he got the shot away.
Because he didn't score, is it because he didn't score? For me, I think in the case of here is that he got a shot on target away. I think that should be enough. The fact that Sanchez saved it is neither here nor there. So yes, I think It's whether then, you know, there was a foul and the Brighton player then boots it clear. Yes, you understand that, but
yeah. And a better shot in a way, wasn't it? It was what he was in. He was in into the penalty area, 1-1. He's all, even with Ward-Prowse, it's a better prospect than a free kick against the wall.
Ward-Prowse has a free kick in that area. It's as good as a penalty anyway, isn't it?
But it did provide us. But it did provide us with a fantastic meme for the weekend of Leo Trossard.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah.
Laying down behind the wall, Jacob Rees mog like.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, and all the Vic.
The biggest surprise for most of us, given that the foul was what a few feet outside the box, that Southampton didn't actually get the penalty for that.
I was half expecting that.
Yeah. Well, on that note, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has provided us with another wonderful jersey for us to have a look at. So
Wonderful's pushing it, AD. It really is.
Well, Vicky, do you want to have a go at describing this one for us?
Green and white. I've got absolutely no idea who it belongs to because it has a badge on it which just appears to be a black circle with a plain white inside. So I have absolutely not a clue who it is. It's a lovely combination.
Can you describe the green and white pattern?
Well, it's a lovely combination of green and white stripes and hoops and a little wavy line as well. It's like something horrendous has happened to a Plymouth Argyle shirt from many years ago.
It's kind of got a little bit of a vintage Sinetti, I feel, about it, but it's not quite... It's
well, what
not,
it looks like, it looks like a green skyline as well, of a city skyline. The only thing, I'm going to guess the country here, because the advertiser across the chest there, I mean, it's an Adidas shirt, is FSO, and I've driven an FSO. It's a Polish car. Think classic behind the iron curtains thing. My then girlfriend from about 30 years ago, her father had one of these things to tow caravans across Europe. It drove like a tank. It smelt like one. The only thing that was missing was the turret. It was a horrible thing to drive. He let me have a go on it now and again. So I'm going to guess this is a Polish club.
Okay. Brian, you wanted to add something?
Not really. It's the sort of shirt you'd probably see hanging up on sale for about £5 outside a shop on North Lane. It's got that sort of...
it does, doesn't it?
It's got that. It's a football shirt, but you can't really tell who it is. And it's got. It's not a high quality. What Al's just said about Poland, sort of, in the old days, not now, sort of rings true, I would have said. So, I mean, that sounds right, but it doesn't look the best quality.
It's not nice, is it?
Well, as many of you will know...
I'm just guessing. Taking Al's lead on Poland, then I'll go with Legia Warsaw, because I think they might play in green.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's Lech Poznan are blue, aren't they? And he might have gone for a Brighton.
There you go. Well, as many of you know, I very rarely will I actually like to admit to the fact that Al's right, but he is in this instance. And Vicky's nailed it, actually. It is actually Lechia. So that's basically me. That means I've now got to attempt to speak Polish. So wish me luck. Here is your shirt of the week. This is the 1992-93 home shirt of Polish side Legia Warsaw. They play in the Elektrzyca, I don't know how to pronounce it, which is the top flight of football in Poland. Home is the 31,800 capacity Joseph Pileski Legia Warsaw Municipal Stadium. The club was formed out of the Polish Army football team originating in 1916 during the military operations in the Eastern Front in World War I, which explains their nicknames, the Militarians or the Legionnaires. They joined the newly formed Polish Football League in 1927, and they've since won the league 14 times and are the current league champions. Add to this 23 cup triumphs, and it makes them the most successful club side in Poland. All-time legend has to be Lucian Antoni Brzezny, otherwise known as Kiki, who made 452 appearances for the side. And if that wasn't enough, he was also their all-time top goal scorer with 226 goals during his time between 54 and 1972. Some links in the UK include Blackburn, Man United and Rangers defender Henning Berg, who managed the side between 2014 and 2015. Cafu, a Portuguese defender currently with Forest, spent 2018-19 season with them. And Eduardo da Silva, who was with Arsenal between 2000 and 2010, also played for them. And of course, there is a link to the Albion with left back Mikhail Karbovnik, who started as a youth team player at Leicester in 2015. He signed for Brighton in 2020 and made his first team debut and only appearance thus far in the FA Cup away at Leicester this season. So thanks for that, Phil. Of course, you can see that and many other fine football shirts, including one that we just sold for a massive amount of money, Al.
Yeah, well, we talked about it quite a lot last week. And if you do pick up last week's show, you can hear from Joe at St. Barnabas Hospice in Worthing, who told us what it means. Is that, you know, the fact that they need £9 million a year to keep running. Our £420, as much as we were pleased with it, is a little bit of a drop in the ocean. But as she pointed out, every penny counts. And so if you wish to make a donation to them, they are always willing to receive. Now, obviously, everyone at the moment has their cap out, has their hand out for this. But you know, it was a tricky choice choosing which charities to go for.
We did go through a very long list.
It was quite a long list, and it was kind of arbitrary. But we were more than happy to donate that money. And as they pointed out, it can make the difference between, you know, a family seeking its own sense of closure in a more dignified way than possibly there might have been before.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's move on from that to some other great news this week. And Brian, was it a surprise that Robert Sanchez got called up to the Spanish side?
Yes, it was. there was some chat, wasn't there, about 5 weeks or so ago about England and Spain both watching him. So at that time, I sent a WhatsApp to somebody I know who covers the Spanish national team in Spain. And he said that he hadn't heard anything, couldn't see it, but Kepa's not playing, A, and B, there's a new goalkeeping coach. So those two things probably combined. But he WhatsApped me on Monday morning and he said, oh, the squad's coming out, and he's right, he's in. So, and then it was just stories in Spain, who is Robert Sanchez? So I think it was, yeah, I think it was a surprise, although Sanchez had been told.
Yeah, I mean, his rise from fourth choice goalkeeper in August to a potential Spain international is being rapid.
Yeah, it is. And even at the start of the season, that would have been mid-September, wouldn't it, when we were previewing the Portsmouth game in the League Cup. And I thought he'd play then. So we have sort of two or three questions each to Graham Potter. And I used them all on Sanchez, and then he didn't play him. So even then, he wasn't playing. But I think, funnily enough, the one game where he didn't keep a clean sheet and where he was on the losing side, Man City, that seems to have been the one that's got a lot of publicity over there. I'm not saying that's why he's been selected, but it's the one which the media have sort of latched onto.
Is that because?
Sorry, Adi. How come? I mean, one, is there a Guardiola link here? I mean, what? Obviously, you know, the Premier League is going to be seen everywhere. So Spanish goalkeeper, okay, fine, ticks the box. You can see that he's there. But what? Who in your opinion, or in the people you're talking to, would be most responsible for this? His inclusion.
I'm not really sure, but it's high-profile games, isn't it? When Brighton beat Liverpool, the whole world knew that Liverpool had lost, the whole footballing world, and they were seeing that goal by Alzate. So I think word probably gets around quite quickly. And also it's allied to Kepa not being in the team, and then he came in the team and actually did quite well in the FA Cup. I suppose it's a thought. The thing is, you know, let's see what he's like. Let's get him on board, and it's a chance for them to have a good close look at him. They've got De Gea as well and Unai Simon. So I wouldn't know specifically who would be aware of him, but I haven't spoken to their goalkeeping coach, obviously, but I've spoken to the player who he used to coach, and he said that, you know, he knows all about him and will have found out a lot of details about him.
I suppose when it comes to the last minute of the game and you're playing against Liverpool and he comes in, goes crashing through about three players, wipe him out a couple of his own to claim a corner, I think these things probably do get noticed, don't they?
Yeah. Now, Vicky, I mean, it's a player which has certainly piqued your interest because, like you said, he came from, I mean, it was on the bench again in that friendly against Chelsea. He got on. He came on because Chris Walton got injured. Because Matty Ryan started the first half. Walton started the second half. Walton came out and landed awkwardly and Sanchez came on. And that's basically almost elevated his status straight away. As Brian said, I was surprised he wasn't starting in any of the cup games, because when he was dropped in that game away at Spurs, it was a massive surprise to everyone. Mm.
But I think the cup game thing, you know, Graham Potter's on more than one occasion talked about what a great pro Jason Steele is. He's obviously talking about he's someone that's very good to have behind the scenes, isn't he, Steele? And let's be honest, if you are the second choice goalkeeper at any sort of Premier League club, or in fact any professional club, you know, it's not going to be the easiest of lives, is it? Because 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, you're going to turn up. So you have to train, you have to go down all the normal routes as any other professional does, and there's very little chance you ever playing. So I thought that Potter was going to go with Steele for those games. In terms of Sanchez, I don't think any of us, if you looked at things ahead of this season, I don't think any of us saw it coming, because I suppose we've probably had it in our minds that if things were going to change on the goalkeeping front, certainly with the younger keepers, it's Walton, isn't it? It's Walton that's always seemed to have been lined up over the last few years. And for whatever reason, it's not quite worked out for him. And you know, whether he decides at the end of the season, you know, he may well look elsewhere, because, you know, Sanchez has, I don't think anyone can really argue, he's established himself now. He's doing really well. The only thing with Sanchez is if he carries on the way he is, then somebody else is going to come in for him, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because bigger clubs than us they're already going to be keeping an eye on him.
I can't remember the last time we had a Spanish international, to be honest. So, apart from Vicente, who's
yeah, not a current one.
Not a current one, no. I think I don't think we've ever had one.
I think, you know, I've seen, I think when he got picked, when the squad was announced this week, I obviously don't have the same Spanish language skills as Brian does, but I was, it did really interest me. And I was sort of looking around Twitter, and I can sort of recognise enough written Spanish to sort of get the gist of what's being said. And as Brian said, there was an awful lot of people going, who's this bloke? Yeah. But then actually, you know, it has happened with other teams before, you know, Southgate's once or twice, certainly for the under 21s, there's players that are playing in Europe and we don't particularly know about them. Wales, certainly, if you look at the Welsh team, and I've obviously got some knowledge of that, you know, you look at the Wales, half of Wales, you know, they've got lots of players that are, you think, who on earth is that? And he's playing for some Belgian team or some Dutch team or a German team. So I think, I don't think anyone can really argue on his performances. The only one that the only name that I did notice, quite a few Spanish people saying, were a bit surprised he hadn't got in ahead of Sanchez. And at least this is something for this season to cling on to, was Guaita at Palace.
Yeah, Guaita. Yeah, he was the other one who was mentioned on the radio programme that I was listening to. But Sanchez got a bit more future.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. And I think probably the thing with the Sanchez, and I think this will tie in with Potter as well, won't it? That he's actually quite good with the ball with his feet, or certainly in terms of making the ball with his feet. Yes, I think statistically he's actually hit more long passes than Ryan did. But I think we've all seen times this season when Ryan was in goal, when actually the faffing around with the short passes, sometimes he would have been better going long. So I think it's not down to the accuracy, is it? It's down to the decision making. Is this the right time to do that nippy little pass, or should I just go long wide and play the percentages without wanting to sound like Sam Allardyce?
Yeah, and the defence seemed to be an awful lot more confident with him in goal as well.
Therein lies the point, AD, that's I think I might have said it on a previous show. I don't think I've seen a Brighton goalkeeper come into the team and command the goal in a way, you know, from almost from minute one. I mean, we've had sort of, you know, heroes that are coming down the line. Graham Mosley was a first division goalkeeper when, you know, by the time he got to us in the third division. And we've had some other great keepers. Michelle Kuipers became a cult hero, and so on and so forth. But the issue here is, for me, is, and this is what I find so astonishing, he's 23. Goalkeepers aren't the bosses of the area that they should be at 23. I mean, it does, for me, give him the potential to be an astonishing goalkeeper. Mm. I mean, all right, you see the showreels of him playing for Rochdale and playing for Forest Green Rovers, and some of it is Keystone Cop goalkeeping. Yeah, get your mistakes out, you know, at other clubs. But for us, in 15 games, he's made one drop. See, it's cost us. No one's going to criticise him for it, but you know, I've not seen anyone, a goalkeeper, ever come in the 40 years I've been watching the Albion, make such an impact so quickly.
Vicky?
Yeah, I think for me, the and this is one of the things I've really, really liked about watching him, is that, yes, he dropped that clanger against Leicester, and obviously it did cost us the game, well, as much as our finishing did, of course, but the best thing for me was that, you know, he's dropped a cross there. It's a fairly straightforward cross. That's the sort of thing that preys on your mind if you play in goal. Or, you know, you make a mistake anywhere, it plays on your mind. But especially playing in goal, he comes back, you know, he gets the, plays the next game, he plays at Southampton. It would be very easy for him when they start slinging crosses into the box to just think, oh, you know, I'll just leave this one. I don't want to make an idiot of myself again. But he didn't. And that was what was so good, that he came in against Southampton. The crosses came in, out he came, and he took them again. And that confidence is amazing. That's so good to see. And I'm sure the defenders must be thinking the same thing.
Well, I think the decision-making process has to be right. For that particular one of Leicester, it's possible. If he hadn't come out and tried to claim it, there's a chance that Leicester fella would have headed it. Now, if he'd have headed it in or headed it at Sanchez, that's another matter. But it was a good chance that Leicester striker was going to get it. And people said, why didn't he come for it? Is he another Matt Ryan after all? OK, so he came for it. His decision-making was good. The fact is, he just faffed it. It's not as though the decision-making was wrong. It's the actual execution of it. It got it slightly wrong. So in that sense, yeah, you'd like to think that's where the likes of Ben Roberts steps up and says, look, you know, it happens. You know, I've dropped some howlers. Get on with it.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, in his interview with Mark at Radio, he was actually... He was eulogising about the influence of Ben Roberts on him, and then when after the call up, you saw the likes of David Stockdale coming in saying how good Ben Roberts is as well. Yeah. I mean, it's been a massive influence on all our goalkeepers, isn't he?
Yeah, and there's Pope as well in the England squad, who Ben Roberts pretty much discovered for Charlton playing non-league in
I didn't know that.
Suffolk. Yeah. So it is. David Stockdale used to talk a lot about what Roberts had did. And Graham Potter sort of highlighted the individual nature of the work that the goalkeepers do, because he was asked about it as well during his press conference. I just wonder with the confidence, I mean, Sanchez does seem to be a confident character, but so I just wonder, just quickly, did he know he was in the Spanish squad by the time they kicked off at Southampton? Because he was told in advance.
Yeah, maybe.
That would have done his confidence some good.
We're talking about Ben Roberts there. I mean, I think that, you know, one clear place that people could see the immediate effect of Ben Roberts was the first season, and I think it was the first, certainly first half season. It was the season where we had Hoopier and Cuton, you know, that half season, and you had Stockdale and Dunk playing, you know, in goalkeeper and defence, and the number of dropsies between them. You know, how many own goals did Dunk score? How many times was, you know, Stockdale coming for a ball, not coming for a ball? He come for it without clearly screaming, or the communication was just all over the place, and we conceded so many silly goals on the back of that. Next season, Ben Roberts is there, clearly sees there's an issue, and the next season, you know, Stockdale was a major, major part of our promotion. He cleared up quite clearly and quite cleanly those communication issues that the goalkeeper must have between, you know, the keeper and the defence.
Yeah. You've also got Kasper Ankergren there as well, which is as part of the goalkeeping thing. So basically, I mean, you know, two goalkeepers at one promotion with the Albion as well. So that's
absolutely
probably unusual. Okay, well, let's move on. We wish him good luck in those internationals. Obviously, we wish him better luck tonight against Newcastle, because I'm bricking it about that one.
Why are you bricking? Okay, mate, why are you bricking it? Come on.
Because we're playing a team that we should be quite comfortable against at home, and that basically means we're going to lose. our home form is such at the moment; it's just frightening.
Vicky, can you talk to AD?
the last thing I want is to come over all teams like Newcastle, But that said, if you are looking at games and thinking, where are we going to get points from? This has to be one. You know, you have to be looking at this game as one that you would target. So, you know, as opposed to, for example, Manchester City at home, that it would be lovely, but, you know, you probably don't see it, do you? Especially once they've already wrapped the title up. So, yeah, I think they're an abysmal side. They annoy me so much. They annoy me so much, Newcastle, because They're a little bit like Palace in that respect, in that they don't do anything. I mean, Palace have one or two better individuals, I think, But, you know, Newcastle, they lack ambition. There is nobody that you think, I know they've got Sam Maximan, but he's a bit of a headless chicken. And I don't think he's a typical Geordie cult hero, Alan Sam Maximan, isn't he? They love players who are continental, a bit flair, but ultimately the rest of the world goes, yeah, they're not that good, are they?
Mirandinha.
Geordies are just, they have blind loyalty to all of these kind of players like Mirandinha and all of that, and Nobby Solano and that over the years. But as a moment, as a team, they are dire. I just look at them every week and I think, how on earth have they got even the pitiful number of wins that they have got? I don't understand how they've got it. They're not interesting to watch. They're dull. They're a bit like Palace, except Palace probably have better, you know, individuals with a bit of flair that can make that difference. And they
you're not helping my nerves here, Vicky. Brian?
Yeah.
I mean, what Vicky is saying, I remember the game up there, and the two teams looked to be playing football from different eras. Yeah. It was just such a gulf. And yet, obviously, now here we are, almost like a throwback to the promotion push, isn't it? It could come down to Brighton and Newcastle. I actually heard my first two pundits predicting Brighton to go down recently, which I hadn't actually heard until now. So it is, it's still really tight, isn't it? A huge match.
See, Amy, there was a thing I briefly read in the Guardian's football weekend preview. They look at 10 things to look for. And one of the things they've said, and this gets you nowhere. I know moral superiority in football gets you nowhere, as we know this season. But they put in there for the Brighton v Newcastle game, neutrals should want Brighton to annihilate Newcastle on Saturday simply because they are more fun. And there you go. That's some independent, in the Guardian. It's not even one of our Albion sporting journalists. That's the deal there, isn't it? And that article actually says, you know, we've all said it. You know, if Brighton can stay up, if they can get those couple of key players in, they could actually be a very troublesome side next season.
Yeah, they are the sort of side that Barney Ronay would describe as a decommissioned combine harvester. But it's with a turning circle. Yeah, I know. I remember the game at the end of the last home game of last season at the Amex, and it was the nillest of nil-nils. It was horrible, absolute horrible game where nothing happened, and it was.
Yeah, it was just a restart game, wasn't it? It was a classic restart. Locked that, no fans. You know, both teams were happy with the point, and there wasn't 20,000 people saying, no, we want a bit more than this. And and it kept Brighton up. I mean, it served everybody's purpose, didn't it? So, but it was poor.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the other big news this week. It's not necessarily Brighton related, but I mean, it's big news in football terms in the fact that Gordon Taylor has been toppled to a certain degree, and the PFA had their first new chief executive since 1991. And it's a former Albion player whose career lasted pretty much 12 seconds, really. In the shape of Mahete Malengo, who no one has got a bad word to say against, pretty much. But it's not the world's most popular appointment, Brian.
No, and that surprised me a little bit, because when I saw it is... you know, he's got such a range of experience and qualifications, doesn't he? From legal to executive to dealing with players' contracts in the Premier League, the likes of Leo Joa and Toby Alderweireld, to being chief executive at Mallorca, I think two promotions, but also scratching around trying to get contracts at Wrexham and Lincoln City and what have you. The languages, you know, he's comes over really well, reminds me a little bit, a good talker, quite positive in a way, quite like Paul Barber in that sort of way, good communicator. I've done a few interviews with him. He actually called me this week and said he couldn't say anything, but you know, it was a sort of a social call. But we sort of chatted a little bit, and then was it yesterday I had an email from quite a high ranking sort of report, quite a well-known reporter in the national media saying, what can you tell me, do you know anything about Mahete Malengo, because he's getting so much there's so much negativity towards his appointment. And I hadn't seen that, but obviously I've checked back now, and I don't know how he'll do as in charge of the PFA, but he's got you'd think it'd be a unique set of credentials, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, they've needed a change in that particular environment for quite some time. And that there's various issues that have needed addressing, which the current incumbent has flatly refused to do. So I mean, it's a good opportunity for a new start for them. I mean, I don't know what purpose did PFA have in the current climate.
Well, no, I mean the PFA is the players' union. It's one where it's as much as we think of players who are always on, you know, 5-6 figure salaries per week. It does represent every single professional footballer. So we're talking professional football in this country goes down as far as tier 6, tier 7. And it does reflect them. And I always think back to a conversation I had with and I'm going to happily name names, Kevin Keane and Paul Rogers when they were at the Albion, when the club was still at North Road in Tower Point. And a representative of the PFA came by to try and sell players insurance, you know, sort of after career short insurance. And I think that they wanted a premium of about 10 grand a month. I mean, the bloke just got laughed out of the room. Admittedly, you know, even in those days, third division players didn't get that much. They still don't now on average. And there was just this kind of otherworldly, disproportionate, ridiculous split of what the PFA think they can do for, you know, third division players versus what they were on. I mean, that's probably kind of an excessive end of it, but it's when you see the public end of it. And I always harken back to Gareth Thomas's documentary about homophobia in sport. You know, this is a rugby player, you know, an absolute man mountain who'd come out and saying, well, where's the issue with what, not football, men's football. And for those who haven't seen it, I suggest you do. I mean, basically, Palace get absolutely pilloried on it, unsurprisingly. But Gordon Taylor was on there and... You know, what's the phrase? Chocolate teapot, chocolate fire guard. You know, it's the bloke just didn't seem to care. So I'm hoping, and you probably do know him better, Brian, is that, you know, Mehetta will actually bring in, you know, a new broom to actually reflect the social issues rather than just the, you know, the financial issues of his members.
I don't know the ins and outs of how he's going to do it, but I'm just impressed by the... It just seems like a new, fresh feel. I know communication won't be a problem. I think it'll be a... That'll be very different. Behind closed doors, I'm really, you know, who knows? But it's exciting. And it's quite nice as well, isn't it, to the player who scored a goal after 12 seconds at Reading.
Yeah.
To now be in charge of the PFA. It's quite a nice local angle.
And again, do you know who it would have been at the PFA who would have actually been his champion there to get him in?
No, I don't know. I mean, like I say, it's not really something I've been following, but then I was just fascinated by how that name suddenly came back. But like I said, I've spoken to him a few times. He's when he said it's different, and he's come over to watch Brighton. He's still quite close to Brighton. He's still got quite a, you know, the connections here. So interesting,
Vicky.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to know when we talk about dissent, if there, insofar as there is dissent for Malango being appointed, it'd be interesting to know whether that is actually coming from the players, the members, or if it's something that's largely generated by, you know, some elements of the media. I think, you know, we see it because this isn't a big name. This isn't someone they know. They're thinking, who's this guy? Oh, he had a few games for Brighton and a few games for, you know, I don't even know whoever else he played for.
Lincoln, Wrexham. Gray's Athletic.
Unfortunately, with football, and you see the same with the analysts on TV, some people seem to be of the opinion that unless you played at the very top level, then you can't possibly have an understanding of football in that sense. You know, we see it when they talk about, you know, the likes of Alex Scott on TV or anyone else coming in that's not part of the old boys network for, you know, you used to play for Liverpool, blah, blah, blah. And I wonder if, you know, the players, I'd like to think, is this an election? Is it voted for by the members? I don't know how it works, but...
It was an executive committee, I believe.
Committee, you know, from big business, from very big worldwide known industries. And so it was a very high-level sort of search. And wasn't Paul Elliott I've heard a few people saying Paul Elliott would have been a good contender, and then you'd say, well, hold on, what does he know about business? What does he know about legals and what have you? Whereas just Mehetta, just from what we know, just seems to have everything down to playing for his local non-league side on a Saturday for nothing. So yeah, be interesting to see what he does.
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of issues which need to be addressed, which weren't necessarily given the full attention. I mean, the Jeff Assel stuff, for instance, is a classic example. But I mean, the PFAs, like as Al said, their stuff is. You think about the players at the top level earning millions of pounds. It's not necessarily about them. It's the players at the other end of it. You know, who've had their career cut short by injury and are struggling financially and stuff.
Actually, you say that, AD, yeah, but there is also the element of the fact that it doesn't matter how much you earn, you can still suffer from mental health issues. And there is also, and this is, you know, coherent, you know, considering that the government report, the FA report that came out this week about the FA's handling of historic cases of youth players and the way they were treated by their coaches. You know, that's where the PFA has its role in supporting its members. And even ex-players, you know, they can still be, you know, it's not just about, like, say, support. And you could earn £5 million a year, but if you had issues, you know, 20 years beforehand, there's no amount of money that's actually going to alleviate that. And that's where, you know, sort of, pastoral care and mental health issues really do come to the fore, and that's the same in any trade union. And it is let's face it, it is what it is. It's a trade union, and so it's there to represent its members.
But I mean, there's other issues as well. I mean, it does. I mean, it hopefully it will provide an environment where players will feel more confident discussing any issues.
If what Brian's saying has got merit, then and what Mahesa Malango can bring to the table, then one can see in the future a sea change happening at the PFA, considering compared to, do you say 1991 that bloke got, Gordon Taylor got that position? So that's
1981.
So that's 40 years of what doesn't really appear to be any sense of social progression. There's bits and pieces, and they'll make a noise about tackling racism and tackling homophobia. Now, you don't tackle it, you two-foot it. You know, you stamp it in the face like that European game last night. I mean, whoever that tackle was, great one, straight in the mush. No, these things, the fact that we still have them within football, in society is bad enough, but the fact we have them in football, the PFA still has a role to play.
Okay, well, we wish Maheta the best of luck in his new role, and hopefully maybe he'll have time to come and have a chat with us at some point, and that would be great. And that's all we've got time for this week. So, of course, thank you very much to Alan Wares, thank you to Vicky Rees, and, of course, to Brian Owen. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We'll see you again next week, but hopefully we'll be celebrating another 3 points. See you then. Bye.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out. And the rise of the factories fall.
Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
As a union man, I'm wise. Lies of the company spies, and I don't get fooled by the factory rules, cause I always read between the lines, and I always get my way if I strike for higher pay. When I show my card to the Scotland Yard, and this is what I say,
fear. My life was half as clear. Now I've got the power to the working hour and every other day of the year. So though I'm a working man, I can ruin the government's plan. I'm not too hard, but the sight of my car makes me some kind of Superman. Oh,